The Bloody Chamber, written by Angela Carter and read by Richard Armitage and Amelia Fox.
The Bloody Chamber. I remember how, that night, I lay awake in the wagon-lee in a tender, delicious ecstasy of excitement, my burning cheek pressed against the impeccable linen of the pillow, and the pounding of my heart mimicking that of the great pistons ceaselessly thrusting the train that bore me through the night away from Paris, away from girlhood, away from the white, enclosed quietude of my mother's apartment into the unguessable country of marriage. And I remember I tenderly imagined how, at this very moment, my mother would be moving slowly about the narrow bedroom I had left behind forever, folding up and putting away all my little relics, the tumbled garments I would not need anymore, the scores for which there had been no room in my trunks, the concert programmes I'd abandoned. She would linger over this torn ribbon and that faded photograph, with all the half-joyous, half-sorrowful emotions of a woman on her daughter's wedding day. And in the midst of my bridal triumph, I felt a pang of loss, as if, when he put the gold band on my finger, I had, in some way, ceased to be her child in becoming his wife. "Are you sure?" she'd said when they delivered the gigantic box that held the wedding dress he'd bought me, wrapped up in tissue paper and red ribbon like a Christmas gift of crystallized fruit. "Are you sure you love him?" There was a dress for her too, black silk, with the dull prismatic sheen of oil on water, finer than anything she'd worn since that adventurous girlhood in Indochina, daughter of a rich tea planter. My eagle-featured, indomitable mother. What other student at the conservatoire could boast that her mother had outfaced a junkful of Chinese pirates, nursed a village through a visitation of the plague, shot a man-eating tiger with her own hand, and all before she was as old as I? "Are you sure you love him?" "I'm sure I want to marry him," I said, and would say no more. She sighed, as if it was with reluctance that she might at last banish the spectre of poverty from its habitual place at our meagre table. For my mother herself had gladly, scandalously, defiantly beggared herself for love. And, one fine day, her gallant soldier never returned from the wars, leaving his wife and child a legacy of tears that never quite dried, a cigar box full of medals, and the antique service revolver that my mother, grown magnificently eccentric in hardship, kept always in her reticule, in case, how I teased her, she was surprised by footpads on her way home from the grocer's shop. Now and then, a starburst of lights spattered the drawn blinds, as if the railway company had lit up all the stations through which we passed in celebration of the bride. My satin nightdress had just been shaken from its wrappings. It had slipped over my young girl's pointed breasts and shoulders, supple as a garment of heavy water, and now teasingly caressed me, egregious, insinuating, nudging between my thighs as I shifted restlessly in my narrow berth. His kiss. His kiss with tongue and teeth in it and a rasp of beard had hinted to me, though with the same exquisite tact as this nightdress he'd given me, of the wedding night, which would be voluptuously deferred until we lay in his great ancestral bed in the sea-girt, pinnacle domain that lay, still, beyond the grasp of my imagination.